We're proud to be sponsored by MyFlex Learning. MyFlex Learning is a scheduling platform that helps middle and high schools meet the individual needs of all students. Schools can easily create and manage time for flex blocks, win time, activity periods, RTI, counselor and teacher appointments, and so much more. With its built-in accountability tool and reporting features, MyFlex Learning solves your challenges around getting kids where they need to be and understanding how flex time is spent. Make your flex time work for you. Visit myflexlearning.com/BE to learn more and receive $500 off the first year. That's myflexlearning.com/BE. This Bee Podcast Network show is presented by IXL. Loved and trusted by more than 1 million teachers, IXL enhances your teaching and takes work off your plate so you can make an even bigger impact on your students. IXL delivers personalized learning across a comprehensive pre-K to 12 curriculum, including math, language arts, science, and social studies, and helps you assess student performance through actionable, real-time insights. Strengthen daily instruction, close knowledge gaps quickly, and set every student up for success. Want to bring IXL to your school? Learn more at IXL.com/B. That's IXL.com/BE. Welcome to the Rebel Educator Podcast, where we work to amplify the voices and ideas of changemakers in education. We talk with students, educators, and thought leaders who are questioning the status quo and resisting tradition in education. We invite you to join us as we discuss how to shift the classroom, the learning environment, the mindset, and the pedagogy to try something new, reignite wonder, and reimagine education. If you are in the Bay Area, we are currently accepting applications for students for the fall of 2023. Yes, we have limited spots available, and also for our elementary and middle school starting at TK through 7th grade for fall of 2024. UP Academy has created our framework so that new and existing schools can develop imaginative, exciting, relevant, engaging learning environments for all of their students. We're excited to introduce the Rebel Project Literacy Curriculum. It's a fully integrated literacy and project-based learning curriculum that supports social-emotional development and is based on skills and competencies. Learn more at projectup.us. Have you ever thought of opening your own school? Project UP is also supporting new educators and families to create schools like UP Academy and schools of your own design. Reach out to join our affiliate network at projectup.us. Now, let's get to today's episode of the Rebel Educator Podcast. Hi, everyone. I'm Tanya Sheckley with UP Academy, and I am here today with Bob Lenz, CEO of PBL Works. Thanks for joining us today. I really appreciate your time, Bob.
Yeah, my pleasure, Tanya.
So you are CEO of PBL Works. You've worked with Envision Education, Buck Institute, and of course, PBL Works, and they all focus on utilizing project-based learning in the classroom to support and to improve student outcomes. So what major challenge in education did you see that led you to initially start down this path of project-based learning in education?
You know, it's interesting. I don't know if I went down the path because I was solving a problem. I think eventually I've seen it as a solution. But I actually started my journey with project-based learning when I was in the fifth grade with Mr. Cooper. He was an amazing educator. And I often attribute my passion about project-based learning to the poetry project that we did in the fifth grade, where we studied poetry, and then we wrote our own original poems, and then created our own actual physical books, and had a poetry reading where we got dressed up, and our community came to hear us read our poems. I got my first public applause. I'm going to say that might be why I ended up in as many opportunities as I could to do public speaking.
You were
like, wow, that's
pretty
cool. I like that. And so then when I became a teacher in a K-8 school in San Francisco, serving predominantly Chinese American families in a range of times when they immigrated into the United States. And I was trying to figure out how I engage my kids and not just do traditional learning. I could see that just wasn't working. And so I did my version of the poetry project. And San Francisco, and we partnered with the City Lights bookstore. We were able to get a poet to come in and read her poems with our students, and they read their poems. And then I moved to a high school here in the San Francisco, north of San Francisco, Marin County. And we did versions of that, of the poetry project with them, doing what we call MTV poetry in our communications academy. And then once again, with our students in the Envision schools, and we did a similar project there. So what I found out is that the same project, same theme, working in every grade level to engage kids, not only in their learning, but really starting to love poetry. Like I still like to read and write poetry. And it all started when I was in the fifth grade. But I do see, as when I was working at Drake High in San Anselmo, we were a national model in the 1990s. We were a new American high school, one of 13 in the country. Got to go to the White House. We are featured in U.S. News and World Report, and hundreds of people are coming visiting the school. And they would say, they'd see the projects like the MTV poetry or others that we did. And they would say, well, this is amazing, but it would never work for our kids. And that was because it was predominantly a white community. And I just didn't believe it. And so we brought the same model to kids in San Francisco and Oakland and Hayward, and saw that what project-based learning has done in the Envision schools has actually prepared kids for college success. And we know that we have about an 85% persistence rate in those schools. And when Linda Darling Hammond and her team at Stanford followed up when they were in college, one of the top reasons students gave for feeling prepared was project-based learning. Because not only are they learning the academics, they felt like they were actually ahead of their peers, which most time first-generation students don't, in the ability to collaborate and to public speak. And to manage projects, because we think of college as like one big project. That's where I think it's essential that all students, especially Black and Brown students, have the opportunity to do project-based learning.
Want to know one of my biggest frustrations with ed tech? Tools that assume every student learns the same way at the same pace. I need my technology to do more for me. That's why it's so important for me to know that IXL provides true personalized learning across the entire pre-K to 12 curriculum. And that its proven benefit to all student populations, including English learners and students in special education programs. IXL is research proven to accelerate achievement. Studies across 45 states show that IXL schools outperform non-IXL schools on state assessments, and independent research from Johns Hopkins University verifies IXL meets ESSA Tier 1 standards. With those results, combined with IXL's teacher-friendly reputation, what more could you ask for? I'm sure you want to increase achievement for all students. Find out how IXL can help. Visit IXL.com/B for a demo. That's IXL.com/BE.
And that's, I mean, you started, first project you ran was in a school that was primarily Chinese Americans. And so you saw from the beginning how it works in different schools and different settings before the success that you saw at Drake.
That's right. So when I taught project-based learning with the middle schoolers, high schoolers, and then I did summer school with multi-age second and third grade class and did PBL with the second and third graders. And that was primarily a Latinx community. So it doesn't matter where you're from, what your background, what your grade level. It works for adult learners as well. I mean, it's just a really great way to learn and get simultaneous outcomes. Because you learn the knowledge you need. We call that the knowing. You can demonstrate and apply that learning, call it the doing. And then when it's done in a high quality way, there's lots of opportunities for reflection and the metacognition that lets you think about how you're going to transfer that learning. So I like to call it know, do, reflect. Those are the three outcomes that you get.
Yeah, it's interesting. You brought up a lot of different things. And one of the things that I hear a lot from parents and maybe your educators that you work with hear this as well is that tension between, is project-based learning really teaching academics? Are my kids really going to be prepared? Are they really learning what they need to know? Are they learning all of the facts and information that their peers are learning that they're going to need to be successful? And so when you hear that from parents, or if you hear that from school districts, how do you kind of rectify that tension between, you know, traditional learning and the learning of facts and academics versus the project-based learning and the doing of learning? How do you explain that to others?
Yeah, a few ways. One is, I think that I call it one of the myths of education that just because somebody teaches it, that you learn it. So my sense is that, and some good studies have borne this out, that kids who do well in school will memorize things for a test and then forget about them in about a week or two afterwards. So just because it was covered, you know, doesn't mean that it was learned. Brain research and learning science would let you know that really to hold on to information, you need to your brain needs context. And so project-based learning and using inquiry and challenge and sustained inquiry is a way to build, and authenticity is a way to build context. So when you're learning the facts and the skills and the knowledge, you actually will remember it because you have something else to hook it onto, not just a test. There's a famous study where they took students who took a test and they looked at their grades and it was a typical bell curve. And then they went back to those same kids, I think a month or 6 weeks later, and they gave them the same test. And then almost everybody failed it, even the kids who did well. And then finally, there's really promising research that's coming out at all grade levels that's actually demonstrating in a random control studies, which will be released in 21, okay, that will demonstrate that project-based learning not only is engaging kids and teaching them the success skills like collaboration and critical thinking and communication, but they're actually remembering more on the content than students who are taught in a traditional way. So I think we're going to see in the coming years that our qualitative experiences with PBL are going to match up with the data.
With the data, yeah. It's interesting because it's one of the things I think about a lot, like being an adult and growing up in the education system. If I only still knew everything I had been taught, like for all of us, if we still knew everything we had been taught, but there's those pieces, like you remember Mr. Cooper's poetry class. And I remember Mrs. Hahn's frog experiment, the classroom. It wasn't even my classroom. The classroom across the hall raised frogs from tadpoles. And I would go in every opportunity I had just to go look at their aquarium because I thought it was so cool. I don't remember other pieces of learning, but there are those things that stick out in your mind because you had that experience and you had the ability to be able to do that. It's another thing I talk about with our students and just how engaged they are. And like you said, just because we taught it doesn't mean they learned it. And I think of the teacher standing and asking, you know, does anyone have any questions on what we covered? And there's just crickets and nobody asks any questions versus when you have a classroom that's very collaborative and project-based, the students are just always asking questions all the time and always curious and always engaged. And so it shifts that whole dynamic and they want to learn that. They're not just being expected to absorb information.
Yeah.
I was going to say, you took the ability as a young teacher to really see that the way your classroom was being run prior to you wasn't working as well, and to initially try that first poetry project. And so you had that agency as a teacher to be able to do that in your school. And we don't see that everywhere. So how can we give educators more agency to really use their creativity and use their education and all of the things that they've learned in their classrooms? You know, so that they can learn, so that they can listen, so they can follow student interests instead of just having to follow a district curriculum. You know, how can we make that agency more available to more educators?
Yeah, I think, you know, some, it just depends on the school or the district. But I think most schools and districts, if teachers are building unit plans and that are project-based, and they can use a project planner that we have from the PBL Works or another one, it really shows how that's tied to the content standards. I mean, the poetry project is one of the content standards for the fifth grade.
Absolutely.
To read and analyze poetry instead of just having it be, well, the other thing Mr. Cooper did is, this was the 1970s, so we were analyzing Beatles poems. And so it wasn't just a traditional, he was playing the music of the poets of the and the songwriters of the 70s, mm-hmm. Which then hooked us in. And then, you know, and then we read traditional poetry. But then he asked us to do something with it and not just take a test. He asked us to demonstrate what we were learning in reading poetry and analyzing it. And so I think teachers, I don't think you have to ask permission to do that. But even if you did, having it mapped out as to why you're doing it and how you're doing it, then most principals are not going to have a problem with that. What I hear from a lot of teachers in public education is a lot of concern about state accountability test. And that's when we go back to our previous question about knowledge building. it's this fallacy that I have to teach traditionally and that it's the only way kids are going to get it. The other thing we see a lot of is what we call, instead of having project-based learning be the main course, it's the dessert. It's after you've eaten your spinach because it was good for you, then you get to have some ice cream. And I always tell people, like, you know, my kids would leave the table and pass on to the dessert because they didn't want to eat the Brussels sprouts. Now, we learned that if we put a lot of bacon in the Brussels sprouts, we could get them to eat it. And then they'd stick around for a dessert. But I think what a lot of happens for kids is if they don't like the Brussels sprouts, they're not going to eat them and they're not going to do the dessert. So it's a lose-lose. So if teachers really are passionate about what they're teaching and want kids to learn, then we got to figure out a way to engage them in a way that gets them all the way through it. Like, they don't have to wait till the end to do something good. Because most often it's a mini, you know, at least half the kids won't be engaged with you by then. Mm-hmm. The other challenge often, and sometimes in independent schools, is, as you were saying, the fear of parents. And of that, oh, you're not teaching it the way I taught it or I was taught, or, mm-hmm. oh my God, are they going to be competitive in whatever the next level is? And one of the great things about project-based learning is it's public. And so one of the most powerful things for parents is to watch their kids presenting their learning publicly over time. We used to do some really great things and, like, you know, started project-based schools. Parents are really nervous. They're like, are they even learning anything? And so in the second year of one of our schools, we did a parent session where we taught them how to score student essays using a rubric. And so we all calibrated around this piece of work. And they were like, this kid needs a lot of work on their writing. And they had all the reasons why the writing needed to be better. And, well, they were really worried. And then we had them do another piece. And they were like, whoa, this one's a lot better. This is really, we might even think this is proficient or even better. And then we told them the mystery of it is it was the same students writing from the 9th grade to the 10th grade. And so as a parent, I think you just want to be assured that your students are learning, and we need to involve them in the process, whether that be assessing the work. But if you watch a student in a vision school that's presenting their projects 2 or 3 times a year, they have to graduate by portfolio. Parents have engaged with their students around real things that the students are interested in. And having to display their content knowledge as well as their skills multiple times. And they can really see from the time they're 14 to the time they're 18 that they're actually matured and grown or ready for the next step. So I think it's actually a much more powerful way for parents to feel like their kids are learning than a grade. I mean, grades are so subjective, and they're often averages. An A in one class can be a C in another. But if you're actually looking at your students' work, then you really have a sense of what they know and they can do.
Yeah, so I'm really interested in hearing more about that and about, you know, you mentioned that they graduate by portfolio. So what does that assessment process look like? You know, how do you assess, how do you build that portfolio, and what are they actually walking away with? And I ask as a bigger picture in project-based learning and in education, just as we're looking at switching assessments and a lot of standardized tests, at least in the short term, you know, for college admissions are going away. And there's, you know, a lot of talk of moving away from grades, you know, but then how do we assess? And as a small startup school, it's something that we've looked at the rubric and putting in numbers or putting in letters or putting in, you know, how they're doing with emerging or progressing, or they've mastered a thing. We've also gone the complete other way and written a full narrative assessment on just progress. And we do, like you're saying, our students do 3 different exhibition days a year. They're sharing their projects, they're presenting, they're sharing their learning. But what does that portfolio assessment really look like?
Yeah, that's great. Well, I can describe the middle school, high school that the Envision Education Systems uses, and that Envision Learning Partners helps schools and districts implement around the country. And we partner with them as well as embedding performance assessments in our project units that we share with folks. But we worked with Stanford University in the early 2000s to design a performance assessment system that has 2 components. One is a set of common task frameworks that are performance tasks that are meant to be used in the context of a project. And they can be used outside, but they're common. So there's a common framework about what needs to be included in the task, and there's a common rubric to score it. And that goes across the whole system. And so maybe it's scientific inquiry and it's related to the Common Core. So students should be able to demonstrate their ability to sustain inquiry, develop a test, run that test, and then analyze the results and share the results. And that can be in a science project, it could be in a social studies project, or maybe another discipline. But the standard is the same no matter where you go. So students are practicing and mastering that, and it's on a 4-point rubric. And so whether they're proficient or not, if it's not proficient, they need to revise until they get to proficient. And then they're collecting these pieces. At the 10th grade and the 12th grade, they look at their pieces and they decide which of these work with a summary. So they describe what they did. It helps collectively shows that I have the vision leadership skills mastered. Critical thinking, collaboration, project management, and communication skills.
And are they self-assessing?
No, the teachers are assessing that work. And they calibrate. So they work, the teachers to calibrate. So they're all clear, say in the 10th grade, what is proficient. The students pull that together. They work with an advisor and they pull that together. It's kind of like a graduate school dissertation. They pull together 4 or 5 pieces of work and make a presentation to a panel made up of teachers, administrators, sometimes a student in the 12th grade. And they make the case using this evidence that they are ready for the next step. If it's 10th grade, go into the upper division from 12th grade into college or career, whatever their choice is. Mm-hmm. And if they don't pass, which about a third of kids don't pass on their first go, they work with their advisor and they revise and they present again. And then that gets down to about 10%. And usually by the third time, all the students have gotten through. So I like to call it a real rite of passage. It's missing a lot in our communities right now. Other like in high school, really prom is your rite of passage. And not everybody gets to, you know, ends up going to the prom. But this is something that everyone goes through. And the adults in the community are saying, you are ready for your next step. And it's based on the evidence of your work, not on a grade. Now, those things could be easily, you know, transferred over to something like a mastery transcript, or you could still use a narrative. But this is one of those things, like for parents, like some of my most powerful experiences have been graduating seniors doing their portfolio presentation as the first person in their family to go to college, and their parents are there. Oh my God, there's not a dry eye in the place. And everybody is completely confident that this young person is ready for what they're going to do next. Well, right now, I don't know that we know. And they're actually most often have some interest and passion about what they might want to study in college because they've been going deeper and mastering things, not just getting through courses to get to the next course, to get to the test, to get.
Yeah.
And then
they've
to
had
go
so
to college.
Many more experiences.
Yeah. All the students at the Envision Schools do at least one workplace learning experience too, where they learn deeply at a work site, have their interest, mm-hmm. and they do a project there. So they start to explore also what their career interests might be. In the younger grades, I've seen really done well as student-led conferences, which it's very similar. It's just a little lower stakes where the kids are working to pull together a portfolio of their work around some sort of standard, like their graduate profile, and showing mm-hmm. how that work and explaining demonstrates that they're making progress on being in whatever the standard is.
Sure. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for sharing all of that. It sounds like a phenomenal way to assess students and really not only for the parents to have them feel ready, but for the student to gain that self-esteem and that confidence burst and that knowledge that all the work that I have been doing really is leading somewhere, and for them to take a chance for that self-reflection and understand, you know, really all of the skills and the knowledge they have gained. That's a phenomenal experience for them as well. So, how does all of this work now that we're distance learning? You know, how have you worked with educators to make project-based learning work through a Zoom screen, you know, when we're not together, when we can't have that shared experience in person? How are you coaching educators to work with that from a distance?
We have a whole mini site on our website, mm-hmm. pboworks.org, that's set up for tools and tips and advice for project-based learning in remote settings. And we held some webinars in the late spring with mm-hmm. educators and to highlight the technology tools. We believe actually that the remote learning lends itself pretty well to project-based learning, a lot better than traditional learning.
Because
Because of the technology, you still can use collaborative groups. The teacher mm-hmm. can move around those groups using things like Nearpod. You can be doing group brainstorming and ideating on the screen and mm-hmm. sharing resources with students that they can watch together or independently. And mm-hmm. then being able to keep the content that's happening on Zoom shorter, and then sending kids back either individually or in groups to do investigations, do the research, do some analysis, you know, pre-analysis, and then come back. And now kids are sharing, you know, now the people that are talking on the Zoom screen are teams of students who are sharing their learning. The opportunities for collaboration on products with experts, I think, is a little easier, since you don't have to get somebody to come into your classroom. You can have them come onto the Zoom screen. They can give kids feedback. And then exhibitions become really public, and you can do those as well. So we've seen teachers who have embraced this have quite a bit of success, especially if they were doing project-based learning before the pandemic. If they're going into it right now, then we really suggest little baby steps with students and keep it short tasks that are gone, because kids just haven't, if they haven't learned how to self-manage outside of a classroom, it's, you know, you're just passing that on to the parents to manage. So we're working really in partnerships with the parents so that they're really clear about the investigations that maybe younger students are going to need to do, so that they're feeling like they're partners in this. But between that and also hybrid, we think that hybrid works out very well too. Is probably, I think, in the spring we'll see much more schools doing smaller pods, and as vaccines roll out and hopefully mm-hmm. the surge ends. Similarly, you have the kids in, you can set the stage, they can go home, do some research, do some product building, whatever it's going to be, then come back to school and share and revise and critique, get some more information, go back and forth. So it can really facilitate, given the remote situation, I think it's, and how bored and disengaged kids are, I think it's even more imperative now than it ever was that teachers try this. I mean, at this point, really, like, what do you got to lose? Because it's clearly not working for many kids to do a traditional classroom on a Zoom screen. So why not try to mix it up? Because, it, you know, I don't think it could get any worse.
That's one way to look at it.
Well, sometimes I think it feels like you're going to take a risk. In this case, like, I think it's all upside on the risk.
Yes. Yeah. But you do bring up a good point for students. You had mentioned a couple of things in there. Number one, the project-based learning, you know, as another benefit, really helping the students learn to self-regulate and self-manage. But for students who haven't been doing that, and teachers who haven't been doing that in their classroom, the need to start small, because that's a muscle that needs to build and needs to grow. So starting with smaller activities, especially from a distance, and then growing into larger projects through time. But yes. I think you're right. It's a great time to start, and it's a great time to learn. And we have access to so many more people in industry in the world that we maybe didn't have access before because they couldn't come to the school, but they can hop on a Zoom call for 15 minutes and share their knowledge.
Yes. We did a prototype in the spring of what we're now calling pop-up projects, where we built out all the resources that a middle school teacher would need to do a 2-week project on sustainability. They got all the materials and some training, a little bit of training on things like Nearpod. And then they just started doing the project. And then we had office hours 3 times a week where people could come back into Zoom, the teachers, and say, okay, what's next? Or I'm struggling with this. And so we're now going to launch those in 21, where teachers can sign up. There's a fee, but they get the project, and it's a short project. It's sort of just to what we were talking about, so they can start engaging their kids in a very controlled way, but still student and learner centered. And for teachers who've never done project-based learning before, but are interested and haven't had a chance to do a training, but they really do want to do something different, they have everything they need and some ongoing support. So it's not like they're just throwing them out there. We're hopeful that that'll get some people, give them, now if they're ready to take the risks, then they also have the tools and support they need to make something different happen for their students during this pandemic.
That's rolling out for middle school teachers?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that sounds fantastic. A way to kind of get your toes wet and have some support and backing. and a soundboard to help. That sounds amazing. Well, thank you so much for sharing your ideas and your time and talking about assessment and project learning. This has been fantastic. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, my pleasure. It was fun. And happy new year and good luck with the rest of the school year. I'm hopeful and optimistic that 21 and beyond, we're going to move into some good places in the world.
Me too. We have a huge opportunity to do some things differently, and we've learned a lot over the past year. So I think there's a lot of fun times ahead.
Yeah, so, great.
Thank you.
All right. Take care, Tanya.
You too.
That's it for another episode of Rebel Educator. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for spending your limited time with us learning how to be rebels in education. If you'd like to learn more or access our project library, you can go to rebeleducator.com. If you'd like to learn more about our progressive elementary and middle school in the San Francisco Bay Area, check out upacademy.com. Interested in learning more about our Rebel Literacy Project curriculum or launching your own school and joining our affiliate network? Visit projectup.us. And if you haven't read it yet, pick up your copy of my book, Rebel Educator, Create Classrooms Where Impact and Imagination Meet, on Amazon or anywhere you read or listen to your books. If you've enjoyed this episode, we'd love for you to leave a review and rate our show so that others can find it and love us too. Look forward to talking to you soon. Keep resisting tradition, Rebel Educators. There are a lot of solutions out there for giving students what they need when they need it. But when do they actually do all those things? You need flexible time. When added into your master schedule, flex time enables students to get extra help or intervention, meet with teachers, make up work, get physical exercise, and try new enrichment offerings. If you're thinking of giving it a try, check out MyFlex Learning, which unlocks the benefits of flex time without the common challenges. Its intuitive design and integration makes implementation and training a breeze. Make your flex time work for you. Visit myflexlearning.com/B to learn more and receive $500 off your first year. That's myflexlearning.com/BE. Do you want to save time on prep work? Increase achievement for all student populations? Reliably meet Tier 1 standards? You can do it all, but don't waste another minute. Head straight to IXL.com/B to learn how IXL's research-proven teaching and learning platform can help you achieve all these goals. That's IXL.com/BE.